want to get on to a subject here that we're going to have to go right on and get into it. We have a lot of information that I like to, I guess, go and explain and see where we're at with these Tyrians, the pride of Tyre. You know, when I started this lesson, I started looking at the scriptures on this Tyre. It looks like Tyre, but it's actually pronounced Tyre like a car tire, but with a Y. And when I got into it, it became a difficult lesson for me because there was so much history before about these people and what they were all about. And whenever I seen what happened to them, I had to know who, why, where. And it's, to me, was a kind of a mystery in a way. And I didn't know where these people come from. So why would God wipe them off the face of the earth, just a slate pretty much of their city? And what was going on in their lives? Why would a king allow his people to be so evil? Why would he be so evil? And basically with that leadership in place, the inhabitants follow along and be that evil, where God finally said, enough. And that's where we're at in this lesson is when we see a prophecy of Tyre with the main part we're going to get into, we're going to back up. This is kind of a time chart, timeline chart. I guess if you're looking to the right, Christ would be along this area here. Here's 330 BC. So to the right is going to be Christ. To the left is going to back up towards the creation and towards the flood. So we're going to get into Genesis a little bit. We're going to get into the Joshua invading Canaan. The prophecy of the Tyre in Ezekiel. We'll start getting in the main part about Tyre, a vision in Daniel. And we'll see what took place as far as that prophecy. And the way it was taken over was really in two different timelines. And that's why I wanted the timeline, was to see the history of these Tyrians coming up to a point when they were taken over. It was at two different timelines. Nebuchadnezzar, which is Neb, by the way, trying to save some room. And I'm going to make a statement right now. The Bible, when we read, is not going to mention Alexander the Great. It's not going to say Alexander the Great taking over that island. It's going to talk about Nebuchadnezzar by name, but we're going to get into with this vision of a king, which was Alexander the Great, this vision by Daniel, which was interpreted by Gabriel, talking about a king of Greece in this time frame. And we find out through secular history, Alexander the Great was there that took Tyre. That is going to be the focal point. The focal point is why it fell. Just talk a little bit about Tyre before we really get into the lesson here. This city was very rich, very beautiful. It was a commercial city of merchants, seafarers who started sailing and going to faraway countries and bringing in goods. They were some of the first people who learned navigation. They were the first people who made the V-hull to a boat. They had the Phoenician colony that really started getting more established there in that area of Tyre was a country who come up with the alphabet. Very, very intelligent people. People who wanted commerce. People who said, bring all the nations here, get the commerce. We want the goods coming through this area. And it was a seaport town that had so much going for itself. One of the things that they did was cedar wood. They brought cedar wood in from the Lebanon Mountains in that area. And King Hiram, I believe at the time, was the king who allowed the wood to go there to build the temple in Jerusalem. You can read about him. You can read also about the Tyrians in there, and the things that they did was, another thing was just the metalwork that they did. Beautiful earthenware. They had technology of the day. And we find out, too, that they had things going on for themselves of making, I talked to the guys about their purple shirts today. This is something that they did. They made purple dye, a dye that they used to make clothing with, which was royalty at the time. And they took a Myrex shell, it's a kind of a shellfish, and they mined these things along those coastal areas, Tyre did. And they made a dye. They learned to vat this dye and make the purple color. And so it went throughout the lands. It was for royalty. And so we see all the kings and the different priesthoods and things had those type clothings on with the purple colors. So this is what they were all about, Tyre. Now let's get into to the lesson here as far as reading the scripture. Ezekiel 27, and I say unto Tyrus, O thou that art situate in the entry of the sea, which art at a merchant, other people from many isles, thus saith the Lord, O Tyrus, thou hast said, I am a perfect beauty. And they thought they were beautiful. The king there, they all had at country a pride problem. And it was a heart problem from within. And they thought it was perfect beauty in their minds. And it was. It literally was a perfect area to live. But this is right here is a lamentation of a funeral. This is after chapter 26. And God is speaking to them saying, you're going down. I'm tired of what has gone on with you through the years. You're going down. And it's a lamentation of a funeral speaking to them. And he said, you said it yourself. I am perfect beauty, which didn't matter. So whenever we see these scriptures, we're going to look and get through a lot of information. If you'll bear with me, we're going to have to get through some information and get down into these areas here that we want to make some points about. And we'll talk about pride a little bit more here. But we have some history to take care of and see where these people come from. See what they were all about. We find out to start with, when we get into the lesson, we'll find out kind of where they were at. We see here Tyre, which is along the Mediterranean coastline, land of Canaan. And some of this pictures here, capital of the Phoenician city, which really didn't come along until about 1200, which would have been right in here. Some of the earlier settlement would have been over in this Babylonian area when we'll get into it here in Genesis and read about after the nations were dispersed. They went into these areas. Sidon, we're going to find out, is probably the first mother country there along that coastline. And we'll get in to find out how that started to become getting established. Genesis 10, 15 through 19. And Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and the Girgashite, and the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Ardavite, and the Zemarite, and the Hamathite. And afterward were the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as thou comest to Gerar and unto Gaza, and as thou goest unto Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboim, even unto Lasha. So we see here the earliest part of man starting Sidon, which was the mother city to Tyre. We're reading in Genesis. We'll start reading Genesis 10 here, speaking about the firstborn here of Sidon, of Canaan. Now Canaan, if you'll remember the genealogy there from Noah, this is all post-flood. And on the dates, brethren, I'm going to tell you, I looked at a lot of different Bible scholars and things on the computer and reading about these things and finding out there's a lot of difference in some of the dates. As far, they're not exact. They're approximates, and I'll say that right up front. If you have any truth on this matter, where I'm wrong in, I'm not proud, and I want you to point it out to me. And if you have a thought that's different on this, any part of it, please bring it to my attention, because I will stand corrected. And I'm not too proud to say I'm wrong in it if you have something that I see here that needs to be corrected. So, in that said, we may have some dates that will be approximates, but I wanted these timeline here to show us through the years of where these people come from. So if you think about the flood, probably way up together, 2500 BC, we're coming into this area here with Noah, post-flood, around before 2100, say that. That's what I've seen a lot of as far as scholars saying before 21. Noah, three sons, Ham, Canaan. We find out that, son, and then we'll have another son, Japheth and Shem. We find out from these sons, one of the sons had Canaan, which was Ham. And we find out Canaan's firstborn was Sidon. Now, wherever the early age of these people were beginning, you had the three original sons to Noah. And when these families started out, we find out in the reading in Genesis there early, they're in the Tower of Babel, that all their language become confounded, correct? And they were dispersed as early nations. So we see Ham, Japheth, going to those early nation areas. We see actually up in the top part, which is going to be the Greece, I believe was Japheth. We see this area here with a purple, descendants of Shem. We see the area of descendants of Ham right here. in this Mediterranean area, Canaan, and they're scattered abroad. But when those languages were confounded and God scattered those nations abroad, we see them going into the different parts of the world, don't we? We see early patriarchal age here beginning. And we find out a little bit about, to start with, about this area of Canaan. And you can remember the stories about Canaan. He looked upon his father when Noah had a weak spot in his life. He'd become drunken and naked for whatever reason. He'd lost his clothes. Canaan looked upon him, told his brothers about it, and he was cursed. And we see that Japheth and Shem went about it properly, and they had respect to the father, and they covered him, didn't turn their back and didn't look at him. So we know that through those nations we're going to be blessed, and that Canaan was going to be cursed, and that it was going to be taken over basically and be servants to those other nations. Whenever it's scattered abroad, we see in this area here, from Canaan back over in the area where actually the Tower of Babel got its start, whenever it started going abroad, we know Abraham as we know him, come from that area also along the rivers up to the north and back down into Canaan. And so we see the movement coming into this Canaan area. We know that Canaan, from the very beginning, was cursed. We find out that in the Bible. We find out that his firstborn son, Sidon. So it's already getting the start of a city area building up. It was cursed. Now Tyre started later on from this mother city of Sidon. So there's early starting of Tyre. The tribe of Asher. Now we're going to get on into more around this 1500 Exodus time when Moses had brought the children of Israel out of bondage and they've come over into the land of Canaan area, going to that promised land that was promised to them. And we find out that Moses gets them up into this area on one side of that Jordan River and finds out that he is not going to be going over. We see here exactly where Asher comes from, the tribe of Asher. You know, we know that whenever they were brought over, there was 12 sons to Jacob. We know that the 12 sons of Jacob started those 12 tribes of the nations of Israel. And so one of those tribes was Asher, the eighth born son. Genesis 49:1, and Jacob called on his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days." So he's getting them together, basically prophesying and saying, this is the way these nations are going to be. This is the characteristics of those nations that you will be in and starting. So that characteristic of Asher was that you're going to be as bread. Out of Asher it'd be as bread shall be fat, and it shall yield roll dainties. And it talked in other areas about oil coming up from the land. It's covered up in olive oil, just richness. Fertile crescent land. So we see along that coastline of Canaan that they basically, the 12 tribes get into those areas, and it looks something like this. Whenever they started settling into the area, when Moses brought over and give this command here in Deuteronomy 7:1-3, we'll get to in a moment. He come up over here to and looked at the area from Mount Nebo. God was showing him the area that he was not going to be able to go into. But they had already established these here, Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh. And we find out those areas was prophesied and kind of established in the, as far as an inheritance to Jacob's sons. So we find out in the scriptures that God, when Moses gets there, he gives the Israelites a command and warnings. So now we have a wicked people. They have settled. We have Moses telling them, this is not what you need to do. And Moses went up before the plains of Moab and under the mountain of Nebo and to the top of Pisgah that is over against Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead unto Dan and all Naphtali and the land of Ephraim, Manasseh and all the land of Judah under the utmost sea and to the south and to the plain of the valley of Jericho, city of palm trees unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. We see here that Moses from Mount Nebo is looking at a country. And he's looking at this country and knowing that he's not going to be able to go over. But he knows that the task that he has done is done, and that Joshua will actually be the one that will be taking it over. Actually, this is a slide where the children of Israel received God's commands from Moses. I'm getting ahead of myself. Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 3, it says here, "When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them, and thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son." Wasn't supposed to intermarry. Wasn't supposed to mix. Was not supposed to blend with these nations. So we see here Moses giving these children of Israel a direct commandment from God. We see here that Joshua brought the children of Israel into the land of Canaan. Deuteronomy 1:38 says, "But Joshua the son of Nun, which standeth before thee, he shall go in thither. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it." And when we look at the history of children of Israel and see all these people moving and coming into these lands, and they're getting these commands, the do's and the don'ts, and they say as a witness, and many times when they would do that, God said through Moses, and he talked to them and said, "I don't want you doing this." And when they commune with God, and Moses communed with God, they would build a monument, and Israel would say, "I am a witness, I will not do that. God, Moses, we won't do it." And as a monument they would build, they was making a point that we are going to commune with God, and we're going to be a witness and say we don't do that. You know, many times in our lives, when we look at this timeline, we can kind of have a relationship with a lot of these things. When we become a Christian, and we come before God and was baptized and said, "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God," and there's witnesses here, and they've seen that, and we've told the witnesses that "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God," many times we slip. And we can say to ourselves, how can these people get these direct commandments from God and still do the things they did? How can they be up and down throughout that history of the Bible, but yet in our lives, we were up and down and we were up and down and not doing the things that we are to do? So the haughty spirits that we can get in this lifetime, for myself and for yourself, should not be there. We find out that we many times will act like the children of Israel. Joshua divides the tribes of inheritance. You know, when they come across into that land, Moses got them to Nebo on the other side of Jordan, looked at the land. Joshua took them on over into the, and make his conquests and his invasions into the land. We see here in 13:1, now Joshua was old, and once they got across into the Jordan, they had been taken over those countries. This is what it's talking about now. "Now Joshua was old and stricken in years, and the Lord said unto him, Thou art old and stricken in years, and there remaineth yet very much land to be possessed." Joshua 7 here says, "Now therefore divide this land for an inheritance unto thy nine tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh." When you think about that, it sounds strange. You think about 12 tribes. They've already established on the other side of Jordan those other 3.5. Now they're talking about the 9.5 when they go over on the east side of the Jordan. You take this land that was an inheritance, and you divide it among these other nations, of the other tribes rather. And 8 says, "With whom the Reubenites and the Gadites have received their inheritance, which Moses gave them beyond Jordan eastward, even as Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave them." So we see these tribes of people coming over, already been prophesied. They already knew where they were going into. They already knew where they needed to have the cattle. That was part of that part of being at Gad and over there on the other side of the river in that area. The grass was great. The cattle people wanted it. So they were split. So Manasseh goes to the other side, half of it, which was all part of Joseph's children's names, the tribes that went there. Manasseh, which took over two portions, if you remember the history on that, and those two portions of Joseph's children's, and then Ephraim was the youngest of Joseph's child. So they're inheriting all this land. So can you imagine the descendants now coming in there saying, "Oh wow, look at this beautiful coastal grass. This is where I want to be." And they set up their little spot. They start building. They build their cities. They build refuges, basically cities for their families, and they start life. So Joshua's dividing these tribes and the inheritance to the families. Joshua's final speech at Shechem. Whenever Joshua had done these conquests, he's getting near death here. Joshua 24 says, "Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord." You think about something for a moment. He's telling the same thing that Moses is telling them. He's repeating the same thing. He said, put away those gods from before you. "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as far as me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And the people answered and said, "God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods." So we see that they agree with Joshua. We're not going to serve other gods. Asher disobeyed and lived among the Canaanites. So now we have a wicked city to start with. Going through the years, a nation comes into it. It was brought in there as a promised land. And they witnessed that we're not going to chase after these other gods by the commands of Moses and Joshua. And they get there, and we find out Asher, which was that one tribe that was over Tyre up along that coastline, says here, "Neither did Asher drive out the inhabitants of Aco, nor the inhabitants of Zidon, nor Alab, nor Akzib, nor of Helba, nor of Aphek, nor of Rehob. But the Asherites dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out." Stubborn, stiff-necked, doing what they wanted to do. They went through living with them. They were inhabitants there. Can you imagine going into a coastal Mediterranean area? Beautiful people, beautiful land, unbelievable trading and business going on, and you're wanting to go there and have war? We're just going to go there and live among them. Let's compromise. Let's just do what the path of least resistance would be to do, and just live with them. And so that's what's going on, exactly what's going on. And not only Asher did that, but many other of the nations did the same thing. They didn't drive out the Canaanites like God had went through Moses and Joshua and told them to do. You drive them all out. So when they lost their leader Joshua, they got laxed in continuing what was commanded of them. Judges 2, 1 through 3, many of the tribes disobeyed. And an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, "I've made you to go up out of Egypt and brought you into the land which I swear unto your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. You shall throw down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare unto you." God saying, why did you do this? You ever got in trouble as a kid? I did a few times, and dad come up and say, "This is what I told you to do. Why did you do that?" It just repeat, you know, here was the command. Here was the action you took, and why? And so that's what God is doing with these children of Israel, is saying, why did you do what I'd asked you not to do? And since you did do that, by the way, now these inhabitants are going to be a thorn in your side. They're going to be there in those areas, and they will be a thorn in your side. So we find out that they were. God gave Israel a chance to exercise their faith and to test them. Many times I believe that we have tests and things in our lives that test our faith. And here, in this areas of the testing of faith, it was pretty harsh. Judges 3, 1 through 3. "Now these are the nations which the Lord left to provoke Israel by them, even as many of Israel as had not known all the wars of Canaan, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at least such as before knew nothing thereof. Namely, five lords, Philistines and the Canaanites and the Sidonians and the Hivites that dwelt in the Mount Lebanon from Mount Baal-Hermon unto the entering of Hamath." So God's now attitude is, you know what? You didn't do what I asked you to do. I'm leaving these nations here and these warlords, and I'm going to have my pleasure. And that's exactly what went on. They would come in and start attacking these nations. The children of Israel just forgot God. And whenever we have that attitude of forgetting God in our lives, we find so many of the times we have snares and thorns before us, don't we? Judges 3, 4 through 7, "And they were to prove Israel by them to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of the Lord," these nations and these warlords, "which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. And the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, Hittites and Amorites and Perizzites and Hivites and Jebusites. And they took their daughters to be their wives, gave their daughters to their sons, and served other gods. And the children of Israel did evil in sight of the Lord and forgot the Lord their God and served Balaam and in the groves. Served other gods. Started mingling with them. All right, we're into Ezekiel's prophecy of judgment. We've gone through the timeline. He had invaded into the area of Canaan. Along this area of 900, 600, the Assyrian Empire was in existence. The Babylon Empire, where Nebuchadnezzar was the king, is in existence. And we're coming along to 586 now BC, where the Ezekiel prophet prophesies about Tyre. And this is where there were some points coming up that we really need to catch. And that's going to be, again, we're dealing with two people. We're dealing with one that's going to take the mainland of Tyre, and we're dealing with one that's going to take an island of Tyre, which was just off the mainland. Now, that island is all Tyre, but when these Tyrians knew that they were about to have this war, they were busy building and moving a lot of their belongings out to that island. And they built a huge fortress on top of that island, just off a half mile coast of main Tyre. So we see a mainland was to be taken over and an island. Two different time also. Right now we're looking at 586. Ezekiel 26, 1 and 5. And it came to the pass in the 11th year in the first day of the month that the word of the Lord came unto me saying, Son of man, because that Tyrus has said against Jerusalem, aha, she is broken. That was the gates of the people. She is turned unto me. I shall be replenished. Now she is laid waste. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I am against thee, O Tyrus, and will cause many nations. If you'll notice, I've got that kind of in bold and underlined. It caused many nations to come up against thee. You know, when you think about that to start with, when we start talking about many nations, some of the things that went on was looking at this chapter is just thinking that it's one man or one country taking care of Tyre. It's not, when it's already said many nations. Will cause many nations to come up against thee. In this area, when it's talking about many nations, we're talking more about this king. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, that took over mainland, was Babylonian nation. And look at the style of the writing here and the way they wrote this, and it's going to explain this for us. So it says here, O Tyrus, and will cause many nations to come up against thee as the sea causes the waves to come up. And they, plural, shall destroy the walls of Tyrus and break down her towers. I will also scrape her dust from her and make her like a top of a rock. It shall be a place for the spreading of nets in the midst of the sea. For I have spoken it, saith the Lord, and it shall become a spoil to the nations. So we're getting into seeing kind of this prophecy in the two different timelines here in just a moment. One thing I want to say here and make a point on is this too, is where God's final judgment for Tyre was when they said, aha, she is broken. Was the gates of the people, she is turned unto me. And so we see here Jerusalem falling right about the time of this prophecy. Jerusalem falls, and they're boasting. And the reason that they're boasting is because mainland Jerusalem there in that area, it goes on up through Tyre. Tyre had all the seacoast, and they had that seafaring thing going on, trade. But the mainland trade on the land was coming through Jerusalem. And with Jerusalem gone, they're going to become a lot richer. It's all about money. It's all about trading. And they boasted about it. So they're boasting about it when they said, aha, she is broken. And then here also it says that she has turned unto me. So that mainland, Jerusalem, is going to be going now up through Tyre as far as the trade. So we see here that when that happened and they're boasting and they're bragging about Jerusalem falling, God says, that's it. Okay, let's move on. Nebuchadnezzar. Now this says Nebuchadnezzar, this same man, Nebuchadnezzar, spelt with an R here though, destroys Tyre on the mainland. It says here, and her daughters which are in the field shall be slain by the sword, And they shall know that I am the Lord, for thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring upon Tyrus Nebuchadnezzar, mentions his name, king of Babylon, a king of kings from the north. And notice too where they come in from. Nebuchadnezzar is coming in from the north, with his horses, with his chariots, and with his horsemen, and companies, and much people. He, singular, shall slay you with the sword, thy daughters in the field, and he shall make a fort against thee, and cast a mount against thee, and lift up buckler against thee. And he shall set engines of war against thy walls, and with his axes he shall break down the towers by reason of the abundance of the horses. Their dust shall cover thee. Thy walls shall shake at the noise of the horsemen, of the wheels, and the chariots, when he shall enter into thy gates as men enter into the city wherein made a breach. So we see Nebuchadnezzar, looking at this timeline, takes mainland, and we understand it's also, when that prophecy happened, it was 586, it was a 13-year siege. Jerusalem falls, 13-year siege from 586 to around this 573 mark that the king Nebuchadnezzar takes Tyre. So we come in the rest part of the prophecy now. And I believe this is where Alexander the Great destroys Tyre on the island. Ezekiel 26, 11 through 14. Two different timelines. When the prophecy was made, two different timelines. And we'll see two different nations basically attacking at different times. But with the hoofs, now in this first sentence is still talking about Nebuchadnezzar. With the hoofs of his horses shall he tread down all the streets. He shall slay thy people with a sword, and thy strong garrison shall go down to the ground. Now this is where the other nations are involved. And I believe the scriptures show this is where King Alexander is going to be involved. And they shall make a spoil of thy riches and make a prey of thy merchandise. And they shall break down thy walls and destroy thy pleasant houses. And they shall lay thy stones and the timber and thy dust in the midst of the water. This is why the scriptures show in the midst of the water, laying the stones, is that he's going and taking the island off the mainland. And I will cause the noise of thy songs to cease, and the sound of thy harp shall be no more, and I will make thee like the top of a rock. Thou shalt be a place to spread nets upon, thou shalt be no more. For I, the Lord, have spoken it, saith the Lord. It's a prophecy that they were going to be completely annihilated. Mainland Tyre, island of Tyre. And we find out in the scriptures that they were. You know, when you see these, and we'll look at in just a moment a little bit more about going on to that island of Tyre and into that siege. One of the reasons that mainland was taken and then stopped by Nebuchadnezzar is that here's 573, 562, he dies. He goes on. 550, through this time frame here, Medo-Persian Medes come in and invade. Well, Persia also, and they all combine as far as the Medo-Persian Empire, 550. 322 now, getting into a different timeline, is when King Alexander takes Tyre as an island. Reason you can look and see where Greece was involved in this thing is with Daniel's vision. I had no idea, honestly, about these scriptures until I started studying this lesson. I didn't know this was here, and I should have, but this is vision is to me is very interesting. Daniel had a vision, Daniel 8. We see in the second verse here, it says, and I saw in a vision, it came to pass when I saw that I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river of Uli. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns. It's all symbolism. You can see that already. Had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher came up last. And I saw the ram pushing westward. And again, notice the direction it's coming from. Pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and become great. And I was considering, behold, an he-goat from the west, different direction coming in now. All symbolism, but this he-goat was just a rough, shaggy old goat in this vision. Come from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had been standing which I had been standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him and come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler, or shoulder, I'm not sure on the pronunciation, shoulder, against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he cast him down to the ground, and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore, the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and far it came up four notable ones towards the four winds of heaven. What's all that mean? It's all symbolism, isn't it? We see. We find out in the scripture of Daniel's vision. We find out who interprets it for Daniel. He's Gabriel. Gabriel tells Daniel what the vision meant. Daniel 8:15-17. And it came to pass when Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Eli, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. 18. Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face towards the ground, but he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be. He says, the ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Medo and Persia, about 550. That's the time frame. Now, we see here that Medo-Persia was being interpreted to Daniel of what this ram was. And the rough goat is the king of Greece, which is going to be, at the time, was King Alexander. Secular history will show King Alexander in 332, in that time frame, attacking and denying the island of Tyre. Here, this vision puts Alexander as that rough goat. And we see King Alexander in this time frame was the one who attacked Tyre. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, we know that Alexander died in his 30s. And this is what this is talking about. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up before the nation, but not in his power. Alexander the Great died in his 30s after, of course, taking Tyre. Whenever he came in, he was headed to Egypt to take Egypt. He just come down the coastline, took Sidon, and they knew of his reputation, and they just surrendered and gave it up to him. But when he come to Tyre, and Alexander started coming into Tyre, they met him and tried peaceably. And Alexander wanted to come up at that time and worship to the god Hercules, which was one that he worshipped, what we call Greek mythology. The people of Tyre didn't worship Hercules. Now, they had their own god, but Alexander wanted to worship Hercules. That was his way to get in and take that city over, and they wouldn't let him in. So Alexander on that coastline, looking, I can imagine, at that island and saying to himself, that ain't going to work. And he knew that he was going to take that island. And so the next thing was to do was send ambassadors in, and they did take the ambassadors, and they took them to Tyre there on the island, and they killed them and tossed them off the walls of the Tyre, which is about 150 foot tall. So that made Alexander a very mad person. So we see now, actually, from that prophecy, I've got it written down, about 254 years after Ezekiel's prophecy, this starts happening. You think and wonder to yourself sometimes about God being all-knowing and knowing the beginning and the end. When you think about these prophecies and the vision of Daniel, it was 248 years after Daniel's vision. It was about 30 years after Daniel's vision that the Medo-Persian Empire come in. Get to 322, it was 248 years after Daniel's vision of Alexander the Great. So we see that God is in control. He's in control of all these nations. We find out in the scriptures you know, a little bit what, or actually amount what Alexander did. He couldn't get to that island. Whenever the mainland Tyre was knocked down and all the rubble was on the ground, and Alexander, now rubble from Nebuchadnezzar that was left, Alexander come along in 332. He picks up all that rubble. He gets the big cedars in Lebanon, and they start building what they call a mole. It's basically a big dock from mainland, which is a half a mile, in areas it could have been 18 foot deep. And they start building with engineers and his construction crew. They build a mole to Tyre, half a mile away. They said that the island on the landward side, they say it's 170 foot. I've read in a lot of areas it said 150 foot high. So you can imagine, here's a seaport here for the Egyptian, seaport here for Sidonians. And so along the line after the war with Nebuchadnezzar, they all basically scrambled and they said, we're going to take our toys, we're going to go into this island. And we see now the city of Tyre on this island. And Alexander says, okay, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but he was enraged and he was going to take that place, and he did. And so once he started building along this mole on the coastline, they had basically the engineers working too, warlords, engineers that were building siege engines, and they would take those siege engines and they would put them on the front of that dock, and as they're building out big tower with torsion catapults, and they were tossing boulders and they were breaking down the walls of Tyre. And they had big rams on the front of those ships, which were there breaking down the walls of Tyre. Alexander wanted it. He wanted it bad. To the point that it was taken over completely, that Grecian life, to have the inhabitants of this place. And so as they're building and they're coming along, Tyre is making fun of them and they're laughing at them when they first starting. And they're boasting and just basically saying, just, you know, what are these idiots doing? And so after a while, they get so far and they say, hey, these guys are serious. Well, they send a ship out and they go out into that area of the big siege towers, and they run a boat with basically homemade napalm and fuel, burst into flames, burns that part of the mole. And then another one was built, basically is two attempts. Another one was built on an angle, because the way the winds and the waves were, they come at a different angle, Alexander did, and it worked this time. They come in and built up finally to that with the arrow and the bowmen in the front in that siege engine, shooting arrows to protect that siege engine, hitting it with boulders, pounding on it, and they broke into a city that said, we're perfect, we're beautiful, nobody can touch us. And he went in and he took that city. One of the prophecies about that was made was Ezekiel 26 and 5. It shall be a place of the spreading of the nets in the midst of the sea, for I have spoken it, saith the Lord, and it shall become a spoil to the nations. If you look it up on a satellite today and see the different things going on, part of that area has got nets on it from fishermen still drying their nets. There's a lot of that area too. I've seen a lot of different thoughts and studies about it. The mainland Tyre, actually, from where the city, there is city, then there is inhabitants, but it's not that city that did inhabit that place. They are gone. Whenever Alexander got through with them, he killed, I think, 7,000. There was 30,000 sold as slaves. There was 2,000 that was crucified. That king and those people were destroyed. But in history, there's other people that's there. Now, if you look at a satellite, you can see city built up around it. But the mainland Tyre and a lot of those ancient ruins, there's nothing built on it. A lot of that area is protected. There's nothing that's built there. God said there's not going to be anything there. It's going to be spoiled to the nations, and he meant it. Ezekiel 28, proclamation against the king of Tyre, his spiritual life. This is the man who was a very evil man. There was Satan in his heart. It was the sin of pride. This is the man who had control of that nation. Daniel knew, when we think about Daniel, he knew his wisdom come from God. This is the difference between them. In contrast, king of Tyre, who thought he was a god, thought he was beautiful. He thought he had all the riches in the world that he could trade and do the things that he wanted to do. But he sinned doing it and getting it. His heart wasn't right. This is where God talks about in chapter 28. If you want to look at 28 and see that proclamation of the king in Ezekiel, he's saying, this is your spiritual life. Your heart was lifted up because of your wisdom, your understanding. By the abundance of your trading, you become filled with violence within you and you sinned and your beauty. I'm beautiful. I look good. I'm comfortable. I've got all the money I need. I've got all the riches I need, and I don't care how I get them. What about our nation today, look, folks? What about us in our nation as we live in this nation? I don't believe that the United States of America has been prophesied against as far as the way it did against Tyre, but we know we all have a judgment day coming. And we have a judgment day that we have to answer for ourselves. And whenever we do so, we must understand in our lives that that judgment day will come one day. If there's pride in our lives, it must leave. The judgment put on Tyre. It reminds us of Proverbs 16:8. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. How can we relate in our life? How can the cities along these coastal areas, I'm not going to name them, you know the ones that are there along these coastal areas that are great, that has commerce, that has trade, has beautiful people, beautiful things, beautiful clothes. You get in your beautiful cars, you live your beautiful life, and you forget God. Does it sound familiar, Tyre in the United States today? And again, I'm not here to scare you into the prophecy of the United States getting taken out by some nation. Could happen for other reasons, I guess, but I'm talking as Christians. Does that sound familiar today? This United States is what went on in Tyre. Does it sound familiar with what's going on in your heart? Things that are going on that I want it, and I don't care how I get it, and I'm going to get it when I want it because I want instant gratification. So when we find out that we have that pride going on in our lives, honestly, is it any different in the pride of that they had here in Tyre? It was a different time, different people. But I don't think pride really has any color, any time, any. It's pride. It's just sinful. No matter when it is, where it's at. And so if we have that going on in our lives, it's got to leave. It's got to leave our hearts. The king lifted up his heart and he thought he was a god. We must acknowledge God as the basis and source of our lives. James 4:13-17. Go to now, you that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. What is your life? Is it even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and vanisheth away? For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him is sin. You know, when you think about Tyre there, when Jerusalem fell, think about that. They said, aha, mainland is going to come right through us now. We're going to get all that money. And they bragged, and God didn't like it. Have you ever bragged whenever you got the best end of a deal? You know, you think about it, woo, got that for a good price. Can't believe they sold it for that. Wow, I did good on that. Does it get sinful with you? I think it has with me before. Because we're so caught up in trade as they were in the Tyrenian days and selling and buying and making these profits, and the king had this gold and the silver and they were shipping and doing this and that. But it come down to a point where they just forgot God. And if we are forgetting God in our lives, we've got to think about him first in our lives. So whenever we come up to a scripture like James right here, are we actually saying to ourselves, you know, our life is just a vapor. I need to really pay attention to the way I act and talk and being boastful and things. Or do I just forget these scriptures? When we brag and there's boasting going on, it says here it's evil. And that's exactly what they did. They boasted when Jerusalem fell. They were thinking about the money. Let's not lift ourselves up, but rather thank God and acknowledge him. Romans 12:3, for I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, which is moderate, just moderate thoughts, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. You know, when I did this lesson, I got into a little bit more of a history lesson than I thought it was going to be. And I didn't want it to be filled with a bunch of history and just one little point at the end, you know, about the pride thing. I wanted it to kind of flow and get into about the pride thing as we went. And when we get into these countries that were so powerful and so rich, I just started looking at it and I started relating with United States of America. I think United States of America is great. My dad fought for it. Many of your loved ones have. But we also can find out in many times in our lives with this country that we have, we can get so caught up in our lives and the things that are around us that are beautiful, that are have great technology, that we can get riches. And of itself, it's not sinful. You know, we can find out we can get those things and we can get it honestly. We can get it with a good heart. But most of all, we can get it first by putting God first in our lives. Very first, and those things will follow. He says, I will take care of you if you put me first in your life.